On November 27th, George Bush, under the darkness of the moonlit sky, flew into Baghdad International Airport. It was under heavy security. It was a trip that was very well hidden from the media and even his own family. He was scheduled to be in Crawford, Texas for a Thanksgiving meal that day. And even his own dad didn't even know what was going on. He went there with one purpose in mind, to encourage the troops. And as they were about ready to give the address to the troops gathered there, about 600 men, and maybe some women, I'm not sure, the man in charge said, is there anyone among us more senior than I to deliver this address? And George Bush comes out from behind the curtain and says he was looking for a place to get a good warm meal. And he was given a standing ovation. And his message was to encourage the troops who were feeling war-torn and battered, away from home and discouraged. And he said, I want to thank you for your service. He said, I want to affirm your efforts are making a difference. You are defeating the enemy. And he said, you've charged too far into enemy territory to turn back. We've paid the bitter price of casualties to set millions of Iraqis free. And we're not going to do this only to retreat. This morning, I feel the need of encouragement, not only in my own life, but in the lives of Christians everywhere. It feels like the enemy is gaining ground and in battles, and we're being bombarded on every side with battles of the enemy. The enemy is posing as a giant that we can't conquer, as a figure who is aggressively pursuing us with threats and lies, and it's driving us into retreat and surrender mode. We've come too far to turn around. God has done so much for us that we cannot turn back. The enemy would have to destroy us, but God has given us the victory. So where I want to encourage, this was encouragement for me as I studied, and I want to encourage you this morning that you have what it takes to win this battle, to defeat the enemy. And one thing I want you to remember, if you don't remember anything else, the enemy is a defeated foe, and the enemy is a defeatable foe. I want you to keep that in mind. The title is Facing Your Giants. There's many giants in our world today that take many different faces. And with our economy, unemployment is one of the big giants in our world today. Your giant could be relationships, illnesses, abandonment, sexual abuse, depression, bills, pornography, a career, a mistake, a future. Could be staring you in the face. And I want to assure you that God has answers for your troubles. God has answers for your problems. God has answers for your giants. And actually, facing your giant is only half the battle. The other half is we cannot run, and we cannot hide, and we cannot retreat. We must face our enemy, the giants. Of course, you probably know that where I'm going with the text of this message is in 1 Samuel 17. I'm not going to read all the verses, referring to some as we go along. The story of David and Goliath, and sometimes I feel like a comedian standing in front of a convention for comedians. And just as I walk up to the podium, I'm given the 10 most popular comedian jokes and told to make the audience laugh. It's like, duh, try to make comedians laugh with the 10 most used jokes. And sometimes when we look at the Bible stories that we've heard from our childhood, it's like we hear them over and over and over again. Daniel in the lion's den, Jonah in the whale, David and Goliath. And we just kind of breeze over them and don't look for anything fresh and new in these stories. But I want you to put all your preconceived ideas on a shelf, and I want to look at this story afresh and anew. A story of David and Goliath, how David used a brave young man to make a huge, hulking figure fall with a sling and five smooth stones as he yelled, as the enemy yelled, slanderings and obscenities and whatever against God and the people of Israel. These two armies were squaring off 15 miles south of Jerusalem on the opposite sides of the Elah Valley, setting up camps on each side of the mountain that slopes down into a brook. You can imagine chariots and whatnot on the mountainside. They weren't built for that. And so this battle was just at a standoff. It was just going on and on and on. There was no real contact, no real casualties. Saul and his army didn't really want to pursue. And if you think about it, in the prior chapter, the spirit had departed Saul. And it says that an evil spirit from the Lord had troubled him. So you can see Paul wasn't very aggressive and very confident in his army and in the battle. And with their chariots and whatnot, they didn't have all-terrain vehicles and the men they have today to fight these wars. It wasn't a very good place for a battle. And even for Goliath, as big as he was, not a very good place for him to be a soldier and to fight. And you may remember that there was another battle when David was facing Absalom that said the countryside killed more than the battle did because of the terrain. So you see, it wasn't a very pretty place for a battle, for a war, with the artillery they had. Now, I want to look at a bigger picture. If we just look at this story in a little nutshell, we miss some of the bigger picture. And I want to begin in Genesis 12, verse 3, where it talks about the Abrahamic covenant. And I want you to think about what God had promised to his people, Israel. And I want to read verse 3, it says, "And I will bless those who bless you, and the ones who you curse, I will curse. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now, with that context in mind, think about Goliath, who was breathing out cursings against God and against the people of Israel. Now, God is a covenant-keeping God, and will keep his promises and his word. Now, get the picture. Goliath is already cursed by God. And there's a dark cloud already hanging over Goliath's head, the one blaspheming the Lord and his people. Now go quickly to the book of Numbers, chapter 12 and 13, where we have the law of Moses. And particularly when Israel rebelled and fear gone into Canaan, they sent the 12 spies. And they came back with a report that the fruits are great, it's a great land, it's plentiful, but there's huge giants there, and we can't go in. Caleb and Joshua said, "We can go in. God has given us this land." They remembered what God had said and the promises that God had told his people. They said, "We can do it. With God's strength, we can do it." But the people were afraid of the size of the giant. And they retreated, and they didn't trust in the Lord for their strength. Now, what caused Israel to be fearful of these people, of the giants in the land? I think they forgot somehow that God had promised them the victory. And they went into retreat mode and fear mode. And they said, "We can't do this." And that generation perished in the wilderness because of their unbelief. And to think they even tried to stone Joshua and Caleb for the stance they took. And if you read a little further in the chapter, you'll see God said, "How long will it be till you believe in me and what I say? Why is it so hard for you to trust me, to trust what I said about being with you and giving you the victory?" I had to stop and think a little bit about Joshua and Caleb were part of the 12 that went. And 10 of them gave a bad report, and Joshua and Caleb gave a good report. And their own tried to stone them, tried to drive them out. And I'm thinking, man, is there any correlation to today? How Christians fight among themselves. And we fire stones at other Christians for the stance they take for standing for truth. A lot more could be said, and that could go in a different direction, but just a thought I had. Now, I want you to take notice that when their children, the next generation of Israel, was ready to go into the promised land, I'm going to read some verses that God, again, emphasizes that I will be with you. Keep in mind, this is all the bigger picture of this battle. It says, "See, the Lord your God has placed the land before you. Go up, take possession. And the Lord, the God of your fathers, has spoken to you. Do not fear or be dismayed." That's in Deuteronomy 1:21. Deuteronomy 28:7 says, "The Lord will cause your enemies who rise up against you to be defeated before you. They shall come out against you one way and shall flee before you seven ways." Do you get the picture? God is saying, people, get this. I will be with you in your battles. I will fight for you. I will give you the victory. Now, with that in mind, what was Israel thinking when they were facing the Goliath? And over a 40-day period, they became more fearful and more fearful of this man who was antagonizing the people of Israel. Getting more bold, he was coming out twice a day, morning and evening, defying God of Israel, taunting them, trying to taunt them into action, to fight him. Open your Bibles to 1 Samuel. We want to look at 1 Samuel 17. You get the picture. You're in this mountain area with the valley between them, with a brook going down the middle. And this huge man coming out morning and night, taunting you, defying your God. And you, every day, you come out to battle and you retreat because you're afraid. I'm going to pick up in verse 12 through 15. "Now David was the son of Epaphrodite, the Benjamin of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. The man went among them, for an old man in the days. And he had 8 sons, and the man went among men, for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to battle. And the names of the 3 sons that went to battle were Eliab, the firstborn, the next was Abinadab, and the third was Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David went and returned to Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem." I get the picture of David being the youngest of 8 sons of Jesse, and the 3 oldest were in the army of Saul. And David was left to feed his father's sheep. Going on to verse 16, "The Philistines drew near in the morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. So 40 days, this Goliath was taunting the children of Israel. Now, if you go on from 17, it talks about Jesse wants a report of the battle. And he tells David, take these supplies, go get a report of the battle, and come home. And so that's what David does. He leaves his sheep in the hands of a tender and goes to the front lines, goes to the battlefield to check on, to see how the battle's gone. And I'm sure it wasn't any intent for Jesse to send David into harm's way. I'm sure it was not his intent. I'm sure he just thought he would go take the supplies, get a report of the battle, and come home. But as David arrived at the battle scene, at the battlefield, there was action being taken. The soldiers were going out to battle. And so David had no choice but to leave his things there with someone, the stuff that he brought. He left them with ones taking care of the tent. And he went to the front line to get a report of the battle. And as he went to the front line to get his brother's attention, I'm paraphrasing here, he heard a voice of this giant. And it grabbed his attention. And for the 41st time, Goliath stepped forward and defied the God of Israel. And it got one boy's attention. All the army of Israel was afraid, but it got one guy's attention, and that was David. And David listened to the giant's challenge, and as he cursed Israel and her God, and he watched as the frightened Israelite soldiers retreated, and he was dismayed. How can this giant, how can this man defy the God of Israel and get away with it? And it kind of took him off guard, and he went and asked another soldier, "Did I hear right? Did I hear what this giant's saying?" And several different times it was repeated back to him what was said. Now, there was a... Saul had given a reward for anyone who would fight this giant. And it kept getting bigger. I don't know if he gave all the reward at one time or if he added a little bit as he went along. But the reward got to be where it grabbed David's attention. And he said, "This can't be. Why is not anyone fighting this giant, defending the God without a reward?" It just grabs his attention. And so David says, I'll fight this giant. Well, I want to jump into an exchange with David and his brother Eliab. Whenever David had this repeated to him time and time again, Eliab heard that it got David's attention. And they began to, Eliab began to tell David a bunch of lies. And I want you to look at verse 28 through 30. Very significant to me. Verse 28 says, "And Eliab, the eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, 'Why comest thou down hither? And whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and thy haughtiness and thy naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come that thou mightest see the battle.'" Notice what Eliab did. He was intimidated by this little boy, his younger brother coming to want to fight this giant. And he tried to feed him a bunch of lies to discourage him. He said, "Number one, you're coming out of your own curiosity. And you're coming, out of your own curiosity. Why?" And he said, "And you left a few sheep in the wilderness." And he belittled him as, you know, not, you only tend a few sheep. And you come, and he questioned his heart, and he said, "You're coming out of just curiosity." And I thought to myself, how many times when we face the giants in our lives, does Satan use lies to try to discourage us? And I want to talk a little bit more about that later. But that's pretty significant to me how Eliab tried to feed David a bunch of lies that weren't true. In fact, when all of them were not true, he did leave his sheep with someone, and he wasn't coming. He was coming in obedience to his father to get a report. And just the whole thing of how the enemy tries to use lies to discourage us. I want to make some observations about this story, and then I have some applications for us today. It says Goliath was about 9 feet 9 inches tall. Now, most of you can only imagine being 9'9". And if you're 9'9", you'd probably want to be a basketball player. I'm not sure what the tallest basketball player is, but it's not 9'9". But he was 9'9". He had 150 pounds of armor. His belt was, they speculate, was 56 inches. Just the hulk of a man. Intimidating figure. And every day, for 40 days, he said, "I defy the God of Israel. Give me your best man to fight." And I thought, you know, our enemy's no different today. And you probably give David better odds against that giant than you do the giant in your life, in our lives. I don't believe our giants today carry swords or spears. The giants I've talked about in the beginning are some of the giants we face, of maybe unemployment or abandonment. And your giant doesn't pray down the hills of Eliab, but they pray through your mind, maybe through your house, maybe through your bedroom. And he brings bills that you can't pay, people you can't please, you can't erase, pornography you can't refuse, careers you can't escape, pasts you can't shake, and futures you can't face. And you, they've stalked you and they've stalked you. You know, Goliath was an ancient foe of Israel. Joshua drove them out of the promised land 300 years earlier. And these soldiers, when they saw Goliath, they probably thought, my dad faced this man. My granddad faced these people. Will we ever get over this battle? And maybe we've grown the same thing. My dad was a workaholic. Or my mom could never keep friends. And we wonder, will we ever win the battle? Second observation I have is, do you see God in the battle? I don't believe I need to tell you who your giants are. We probably all know who our giants are. And you recognize and you see them coming, you hear them coming. But the question I want to ask, is that all you see? Do you see the giant or do you see God? I believe David saw and heard more. I believe David saw God. Yeah, I believe he saw Goliath, but I believe he saw God more. And if you read the story, none of the soldiers of Israel mentioned God. Saul didn't mention God. But David shows up on the scene, and the first thing he does is, someone's defying my God. Someone's defying my God. The soldiers never mentioned it. His brother never mentioned it. David steps on the stage and mentions the subject of the holy living God. He doesn't take much time to chit-chat with Saul about it either. He said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." No one discussed God but David. David discussed God. And I believe this is more than David versus Goliath. I believe this is about God focused, about being God focused rather than being giant focused. David sees what others didn't see, and he refused to see what others did. Let me say that again. David saw what others didn't see, and he refused to see what others do. And you think about all eyes were on this giant. All eyes were on this huge hulking figure. But David's was on the Almighty God. All the journals describe that every day this hulking man came out to taunt them and taunt them. But David majored on God. David said, "You come with me with the sword and the spear and with the javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the army of Israel." Here we see a David who is passionate about his God, about passionate about what his God can do, about passionate what God can do in the battle. And I want everyone here to think about the battle that they're in. Think about what you see in the battle. Do you see the giant? Or do you see God? Do you see the giant who is a hulking figure? Or do you see a God who is all-powerful and almighty and able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think? Young people, the battle's huge. The giants are huge. And sometimes we face them, we say, we ain't got a chance. But I want you to think about David and what he saw. He saw more than a giant. He saw God. He saw a God who was able to defeat the